Welcome to Herb W. Morgan's Slaying Bulls and Bears, a podcast about economics, markets, investing, politics, and profit. Every Monday, in less than 20 minutes, Wall Street portfolio manager Herb W. Morgan distills the complex and complicated into the simple and sensical. Here's Herb now.
Good morning, Monday, August 14th, 2023. I'm Herb Morgan, Senior Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer here at Cantor Managed ETF Portfolios. This is my weekly economic and market commentary for the week beginning today. As a reminder, this is available both by subscription with the charts and graphs, the visual, or as audio only as podcasts on any of your favorite podcast formats. The presentation has been prepared by us for use with you, whether you are an investor or a financial advisor. Of course, you are expected to make your own investment decisions. Nothing contained herein should be treated as investment advice. There are no recommendations for the purchase or sale of any securities. The information contained herein is purely for informational purposes. Let's move on. We had a negative week across the board, with the exception of high yield and floating rate debt and alts. I guess it wasn't across the board, but on equities, it was across the board. And on sovereign debt, on U.S. Treasuries, down 1.19 on the 20-plus index, and Treasuries are a massive component of the Barclays Aggregate Bond Index, dragged that down about 64 basis points. This is about a week after Fitch, one of the U.S. rating agencies, downgraded U.S. sovereign debt, citing persistent budget deficits and the overall accumulation of debt as it relates to GDP. And we're expected to have another massive, stimulative, yet massive budget deficit in this fiscal year that we are in right now, that ends, of course, in September. Moving on to economic data for the week, consumer credit was expected to go up $13 billion. It far surpassed that, up almost $18 billion, driven by a pretty large gain in automobile loans. It was the largest number ever for auto loans. That's surprising, given that interest rates have come up significantly. We are anecdotally beginning to see more and more of the special low rates, the 2.9% offers, et cetera, and the advertisements that we see on television over the weekend. But that was offset in a decline in new student loans. Interesting. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about small business optimism. Up again, that's good. Rose from 91.0 to 91.9. That was above expectations. People said in the next 6 months, we think the economy is going to continue to improve. Greater number said that they hired more people. They're expecting to, they have reported more CapEx, capital outlay, and higher inventories. And we're going to get back to wholesale inventories as we progress here this morning. Still, labor market's very tight, and businesses reporting it is difficult to hire people. Trade deficit came in for the month of June. Went to $65.5 billion, kind of right in line with expectations. Imports and exports both declined by 0.1%. Remember, a trade deficit is a subtraction from GDP. A trade surplus is an addition to GDP. So when you always run a deficit, which we always have or have for many decades, trade deficit, that's always a drag on GDP. But when it starts to improve, a little bit of an improving trend here since, you know, late 2021, if that were to continue to improve that trend, that's a positive for GDP and for growth. I mentioned we get back to inventories. This is wholesale inventories. Now, this can be a series of bounces around. When you go into recession, you have a lot of drawdown in inventories. When you recover, come out of recession, you have a big uptick in inventories. Pretty obvious here when you look at that. There's your drawdown, there's your uptick. And now we're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months below zero or negative growth in inventories. Now that can be happening. You can have inventories decline rather because sales are growing so rapidly and the economy is doing really well. But what we're starting to see now is sales out the other side starting to fall. It's 2 consecutive months, 7/10 in June after 5/10 in May. So what we like to do is we want to look at the sales to inventory ratio to determine which one it is. Is it slowing down of demand and therefore slowing down of production? We know the ISM and we know the other manufacturing, S&P Global manufacturing indicators are both have been negative, showing contraction. I incorrectly called recession back in March on that. But we're seeing now these inventories decline. So we want to look at this inventory to sales ratio. And when your inventories are going down, but your inventory to sales ratio is going up, which you have right here, that can often be a sign of recession. And so I went back, took this graph back to 1992, added the three recessions we've had, really four, there's a tail end of one right there, since 1992. And you can see in three out of three cases, the recession came and inventories were way up relative to sales because sales are going down. So there's a slowdown in production that can lead to layoffs, et cetera. But again, we've got this dichotomy in that the service sector is doing so well. So here we are today at the highest inventory to sales ratio we've had since we started recording this back in 1992. Going back for a second, wholesale inventories are going down. That is a very negative sign. So perhaps the recession we thought we had in March, when we had the banking, the constriction of the banking, which has not ended, by the way, perhaps that is just delayed and pushed out at this point. This is a serious and significant graph to keep in mind. Weekly initial claims for unemployment are rising. It went from 227 last week to 248, despite the fact that the labor market is very tight. And that is still very good. I mean, anything below 300,000 is a healthy labor market. But you can see how we could get to 300,000 pretty quickly from this 248 level. We also got data last week on inflation, both CPI, Consumer Price Index, and PPI, Producer Price Index. And we're continuing to see great progress there. Fed has allowed the balance sheet to roll off. The Fed has raised short-term interest rates. We've seen the M2 money supply turn negative on year-over-year growth, something we've never seen before in history. And so we've got price pressures abating. CPI for July rose 0.2%, second straight month, 3.2% from a year ago. The estimate was for 3.3, sorry, not 2.3. Core CPI also up 0.2, up 4.7 year-over-year. So trending in the right direction. The headline CPI, which goes up more, is coming down more. That is pulling the core, which excludes food and energy. The Fed's objective and goal is to get core down at 2. So they've got a ways to go. It doesn't mean they need to keep raising rates necessarily, because the rate increases they've already done are yet to fully manifest themselves into the economic data. It takes time. We call that the policy lag between action and measurement of results. On the PPI or producer side, the graph looks nearly identical. Core PPI up 0.2, right in line with expectations, up 2.4 year over year, 1/10 ahead of expectations. So you can see there's PPI right there. PPI is down, well down below the 2% level, but the core still a little above it. Tremendous progress. The rest is likely to happen, and the Fed doesn't really need to worry about continuing to raise interest rates. That is why the Fed, the world interest rate probability that looks at the potential for Fed interest rate hikes. Let me bring that up for you, actually, while we're here. Now bring that into your screen, and you can see here that the likelihood of a hike or a cut at the September meeting is almost nil. Little bit for a hike in November, about 40% chance. That declines immediately, and then we start getting into a chance of an actual cut by March, and the futures market's 0.9. That's considered pretty good, pretty close to 100%. So the markets are predicting the Fed actually starts to cut rates by May, We'll see if that is the case. Obviously, these can change on a daily basis. University of Michigan consumer sentiment. Consumers are starting to feel better. I think they're feeling better because the pricing pressure is easing. It doesn't mean prices are coming down or going back to what they were. It just means that the rate of increase has slowed down significantly. earnings season also came in good, and that's helping to make people feel good and their sentiment higher. We've had 455 of the S&P 500 companies report. We've had 362 of those beat the consensus estimate, and only 71 have failed to meet that estimate. And so we get to the S&P 500, looking at some fundamentals here. This is a busy graph. The PE ratio, which has come all the way up from mid last year in the 15 range, 15 and a half multiple, to over 19 times earnings. And that's caused a lot of people to say, hey, the stock market's expensive. It's like, well, yeah, maybe it is. But we've had, you know, much higher before, and it can stay expensive for a long time, or the earnings can continue to grow into it. That brings the multiple down. But expensive compared to what? That's always the question. The earnings estimates are continuing to rise. At the end of last week, the earnings estimates for the forward 12 months of the S&P 500, now that we've got that second quarter earnings season is fully reported, $232 and rising. So when I say compare to what to determine whether or not it's expensive, you always want to compare the earnings yield, which is the opposite of the price to earnings ratio. It's the earnings to the price ratio, call that the yield, the earnings yield relative to the risk-free yield. The risk, what's risk-free? U.S. Treasuries. U.S. Treasuries, 10-year treasuries are paying about 4%. So if you take those two numbers, which you can see here, the S&P earnings yield, 4.6%, and the 10-year treasury yield, 4.2%, you're only getting an additional 0.4, and we call that the equity risk premium. So if we're taking all this risk in the equity markets, you're only getting 0.4% higher than you would buying U.S. Treasury bonds in terms of the earnings. So why do we do it? Well, because it's no guarantee that that's the way things are going to unfold. So if inflation is coming way down, what if the yield in the 10-year treasury comes way down? So is it that stocks are expensive at 19 times earning, or is it that bonds have gotten really, really cheap at a 4.2% U.S. 10-year and 5.5% on investment-grade high-quality corporates and higher on high-yield debt without spreads really widening? And the answer might be somewhere in between. So what this really does to me is it makes the argument for consistent, balanced portfolio, right? The classic 60-40 or 70-30 stock bond portfolio. If stocks go down and your bonds hold their value or go up, then you simply rebalance. You're buying more stocks in the anticipation that they will again go back up and again go back to new highs as they always have in the past. No guarantees of it, though. That's the risk associated with investing. But a balanced portfolio, in my mind, makes sense for most people most of the time. Now, we move on here to economic data for the week. Monday, nothing scheduled. Pretty quiet. We've got retail sales, import and export prices, New York State manufacturing, June business inventories, housing sentiment, starts and permits, industrial production, capacity utilization, which is also a good indicator of inflationary pressure. Below 80 is disinflationary. Above 80 is generally thought to be inflationary. Weekly jobless claims, that could be the scary one this week, quite frankly. If that were to somehow perk up well above 250, 260, something like that, up from 248, that could cause the markets some angst. Thanks, everybody. You know where I'll be, and I'll be back again in 1 week. Don't forget to listen, tweet, retweet, post, tell a friend, etc. Thanks, and see you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Slaying Bulls and Bears. If you'd like to download the slides for this week's podcast, go to www.efficient-portfolios.com and join our mailing list. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, rate us online, and share with a friend if you found this helpful. See you next week!